It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 486 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is the return of two of my favorites here at the podcast. That's John Hervey and Lewis Southard. Everything kicks off with the return of John Hervey from Black Tiger Hidden Dragon. He's got an Indiegogo project going on right now for the latest chapter in his successful franchise. It's described this way. The Tigress is back following her sole lead into her father's murder as a hidden evil arises. Be sure to support this as soon as you can. Then everything wraps up with the return of Lewis Southard as he talks about one of my favorite series, Villains Seeking Hero. It was his first comic, and we talk about the future of the comic, as well as the other projects he's working on, and I highly recommend all of them, so be sure not to miss them. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to John Hervey, the creator of the Black Tiger series. And you got a new Indiegogo for the second part, which is actually, yes. This is number one. How you doing, John?
Doing well, Wayne. Really appreciate you having me on again. It's always great to chat with you.
Yeah, so talk about this now. As I was saying, this is actually the second book, but it's listed as number one?
Yeah, it's a little bit confusing in that regard. So the first graphic novel, which was Black Tiger, Legacy of Fury, that was we gave the whole first story arc in that graphic novel. So that was 172 pages. This next graphic novel is basically it's going to be in total about 88 pages, 75 pages of story, and it is the first half of the next story arc. So confusingly enough, it's called Black Tiger Hidden Dragon Volume 1. It's Volume 1 of the new story arc, but it's actually the second, I guess, installment in the Black Tiger series.
Cool. Well, I enjoyed the first one. It was a great book. I really love it. I thought the art was very professional. The storytelling was all great. I love the characters. As we've said in the past, I love a good, strong female character, which is one of the characters in there. And I don't know if we want to spoil stuff, but I guess if I start reading some of the descriptions that's on the Indiegogo, you let me see the Indiegogo page before it starts. Now, we should let people know. People always get mad at me because I don't say these things soon enough for them. When does the Indiegogo start?
So the Indiegogo starts on the 18th of May. And what you're looking at right now is the mailing list. So if people type in Black Tiger Hidden Dragon, they can go to that mailing list now and they can sign up. And there are some perks to signing up early, including, of course, you know, you'll get notified. But there's some other things that we want to give away to folks that sign up early and then purchase the book.
Cool. And what's the name of the company again?
Beyond Time. So it's Beyond Time, Inc. But if you go to beyondtimecomics.com, that's actually where that's really our web presence and our landing page. If you go there, you'll be able to see we have a web reader and we have a number of comics. So the whole Black Tiger Legacy of Fury, all six issues that made up that graphic novel, they're there. The campaign that we're actually closing the day before we start Black Tiger, which is Magna, The Last Pantheon, Volume 1. You can read that. It's there on the website, on the web reader. So that's there. So we're concurrently, we have the web platform as a means for people that are more interested or just makes more sense to read books digitally. We've been really blessed in that you know, we were able to pick up, you know, a number of folks following our stories between Magna and Black Tiger. But, you know, we've picked up folks in the UK and in Australia and in South Africa. So in different parts of the world. And shipping is, you know, some people are paying more for the shipping than for the books. So for some folks, it just, you know, economically, they got the digital. And actually with the Magna, the Last Pantheon Volume 1 campaign, mm-hmm. we sold nearly 60 of the digitals. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's a material amount, you know, kind of in the grand scheme of things.
That's great. My gosh, because especially like if you're mentioning like if you're overseas and you don't want to pay the postage and all you got to do is sign up for the digital and you probably can get the link pretty quickly.
So with the digital, people just set up their profile mm-hmm. and then we give them access to the books. So mm-hmm. once they set up their profile, we enable them to read whether it's, you know, the Black Tiger Legacy of Fury series or the first three issues of Magna, The Last Pantheon. Our intention with this new series, Black Tiger Hidden Dragon, production is so pencils, inks, colors. Pencils and inks are complete. There are about 10 more pages that need to be colored, and lettering has already started on the other pages that are completed. So our intention is by the time the campaign wraps up, kind of like we did with Magna, production is complete. So then we get, you know, we go right to the printer, get people their books in hand, and then we're going to roll right into our next campaign for Magna, The Last Pantheon, Volume 2. So we're trying to get a little bit of, you know, our own process in place, and hopefully we can bring three graphic novels a year to people.
Wow. Very good. Now, since we're talking about Black Tiger Hidden Dragon, do you know when that Indiegogo campaign ends?
So that's going to be a 60-day campaign.
60 days. So it starts May 18th. What about June 18th to the land?
So that'll be July. That'll be about July 17th
or 18th. 60 days, right.
Yeah.
Duh. Okay. Yeah. So that'll be July 18th is there about.
So that'll end in July and you know, the mid part of July, then our intention is to fulfill the campaign by September, definitely have the campaign fulfilled. But we should be able to get it done sometime in the August timeframe. And then September, we'll launch the next campaign for Magna.
Okay. Very good. And I already signed up for the Magna for the first campaign, so I'm looking forward to getting that. That looks like a great series as well. But let's stick to...
Oh, so you didn't get your book yet for Magna?
I don't think I did. Did you send...
Because everything is shipped.
Oh, okay. Well, if I need to, I'll go back and I'll get a digital one. In case I hate to tell you, but the mail right now is a mess. Yeah. I sent my brother a box full of comics. It took, I paid for 2 days shipping. It took a week and 2 days for it to get there. And that was lucky. Oh, I'd sent them something else. It took like 2 months, a couple of months ago. So I was.
Well, we did the first Black Tiger campaign, we sent out all the books. One of our backers in England, I guess 2 months after we sent it, it was returned to us. That's when it was stamped as being returned, but it didn't get back to us for yet another month. So literally by the time we got his package back, mm-hmm. we, you know, gave him access to the digitals for his, you know, just for the, you know, the kind of the headache of that. But we ended up packing Black Tiger and Magna all together. And shipping it to him. So I will definitely look, Wayne, and see where you're.
Honestly, I support several crowdfunding things, and sometimes I forget which one. What did I do for this? Did I ask for digital this time, or did I ask for a paper copy? I can't remember sometimes. Yeah. So I just want to do that. So, well, let's talk about Black Tiger. For those people who may not have heard you the last time that you and I talked,
yes.
Why don't you give an overview as to what the series is about?
Okay. So Black Tiger is, think of it as a mantle. It's a power that's handed down throughout the generations. So throughout time, throughout the millennia, there's always been a Black Tiger, different people throughout time. And you come to the present, and for those of you that picked up Black Tiger, Legacy of Fury, the city of Los Santos is a city at war, and you kind of have the old guard, Italian mafia, a new brutal breed of gangsters, and the Russians and the Triads and the Vatos, and then you have these feared and reviled metahumans, and you know, a thinly stretched police force. And in between all of this, there's been one man who has served as Los Santos' self-appointed protector for decades. And this is Black Tiger, called the Fist of Justice. And he was using his metahuman powers and his bone-crushing kung fu to protect the innocent and to punish the guilty. No one knew who the Black Tiger was, but he was actually one of the men of the Fong family. The power had been passed down from father to son for a number of generations. But the family is fragmented. And what ends up happening is, through the course of the first story arc, you get to see four different wielders of the Black Tiger power. And then ultimately, there is one character, Jin Fong, who emerges at a very costly price as the Black Tiger. And that takes us to where we are now with Black Tiger Hidden Dragon. So Jin, she is now the unexpected recipient of a mystical martial arts superpower that she just recently learned has been in her family for generations. And she strives to restore the heroic legacy of her father, which, as we see throughout in the series, he actually gets posthumously discharged from and dishonored from the police, and his work as the Black Tiger has been undone. So she realizes there's a plot much bigger than that, just against the Black Tiger, but it's, you know, against her family. So in, you know, I guess a little bit in true kung fu style, you have the necessity to honor your family and the necessity to right the things that are wrong. And so she ends up waging both a personal and a professional battle, because she's an assistant DA, against injustice. And she really finds, as she has these burgeoning powers that she doesn't understand and she just can't completely control, she finds herself in the midst of all that's going on in the city and the things that are impacting her family. And that's when she starts to become wise to some of the forces that she's going up against. Mm-hmm. So without giving you guys spoilers, it's a fun mixture of martial arts and comic book action. You know, as someone who has loved and written stories for a long time, you know, I love to be able to provide some elements, either whether they be historical or, you know, but I really like to keep the stories fun, and I like to keep, because I really love just the fact that comics enable you to escape and just go into a different world and, you know, enjoy adventures. And that's the whole point, you know, of the Black Tiger series. And even as she comes up against obstacles and has to overcome these obstacles and grow, I think it's something that we can all, you know, in our own way, kind of connect with, as we've all had to overcome different things in our lives.
Yeah, you said the magic word for me, and that's the word adventure.
Yeah.
I always like adventure, and I think your books always do a great job of taking us on an adventure, about going places where we might not have been in our real lives, and also getting a chance to get to know some of these people really right. Well, I think it's one of the things I wanted to talk with you about, is making these characters breathe and live.
Yes.
And, you know, how do you do that? What is it about? What are the ways that you find that work best for making those of us who are readers, you know, really come to identify with these characters?
Well, you know, oftentimes the characters are, they have elements that are kind of amalgams of whether it's different people that I know. I mean, you look at the character of Jin Fong, she definitely kind of is an amalgam of some fictitious characters that I like, but as well as she has, you know, some of the personality traits of folks that I know, kind of like my wife and some other folks. And so I think what you do is you're able to, you know, kind of as the story progresses, you really start to find your stride with characters. And then and it's almost like role playing, you know, when you, for anyone that has ever engaged in, you know, any of the role playing games, the first thing you do is you develop your character, you know, unless of course you're the game master, then you're, you know, constructing the adventure. But the first thing you do is you develop your character, and yeah, you develop your character's attributes, but then you start to figure out your character's personality. And as the story has developed and these different characters have literally come to life and they have, you know, their own personalities have really come to the fore, you end up having a story. So I have a red thread that runs through my story. But the characters, the way that they would act or respond, it really becomes them. So then I find myself as I'm writing, you know, the characters are kind of writing themselves in situations. And my job as a writer is A, of course, to stay true to the characters, but B, to also enable the characters to grow, to learn, to develop. And some characters do stagnate. But you don't want to have a book full of characters that are stagnating. You want the development, you know, the beautiful art, the action. Those are the things that draw people in. But ultimately, it's the story, it's the progression, it's the development of the characters, it's the relationships. That's what keeps people wanting to come back.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like I said, I like strong female characters. And to me, the strong female in this book is very appealing to me. And as I often like to say, I've read male characters for decades now, and I can usually get some idea as to what a male character is going to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't matter if they're a scientist or if they're a bad guy or if the other things. I always can look at them and say, you know, I bet they're going to do this next. But right. When you go to a female lead, like the one that you have, I don't know, and I like not knowing. It's kind of a fun thing for me to be able to read the story and not know where this is going to go. So that's one of the things I really enjoy about, you know, the choices you made.
Well, it's great having characters that have different motivations than we have. Mm-hmm. And also characters that are multifaceted. So, you know, for Jin, she's a very strong character. She also has her areas in which she does doubt herself. And she has things that motivate her that, you know, go well beyond just simply, you know, honoring her family or, you know, righting a wrong. You know, she's dealing with other issues as she's trying to develop as a hero. She's trying to figure out who she is as a hero. Mm-hmm. And that makes for a fun story. And it also makes for growth. And we get to see her brother before her and her father. And we get to see the ways in which she is similar, some of the ways she doesn't like, and the ways that she's dissimilar, and how she's trying to carve out her own path and doing this while, like you said, I mean, she is a female character and she looks at things from a perspective that is different than her male predecessors. And in many regards, that can give her just a different way of approaching things than maybe her male counterparts would have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was that more of a challenge for you as a writer, or was that more fun, something someplace you haven't been before?
Yes, both. the beautiful thing that's helped me a lot is having my wife as my editor. Mm-hmm. Just kind of our brains, they operate so differently. And when I talk with my wife, and even when I present her with scenarios, you know, kind of the first things that would pop into her mind, I'm like, really? That's the first thing that popped into your mind in this scenario? Interesting. Okay. So that means you're going about this a completely different way, than a traditional hero would. You know, a traditional hero's go, okay, I'm going to take this head on, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to bash this in the nose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was like when they had Captain Janeway on Voyager, which I always used as a sample. She looked at things differently than, say, Kirk or Sisko or Picard or any of those looked at them. And as such, there were, it was so interesting to me, and something I do want to touch on with you. How do women react to Jen? Because, you know, a lot of the female fans of Voyager thought that she was too male, that she should sit and talk things out with people much more. She shouldn't be firing phasers hardly at all. She should be, you know, she should be sitting down and let's sit and talk out our problems and stuff. And of course, television, that's not one of the better places to do that kind of thing.
Exactly.
So I'm just kind of interested. Have you gotten much feedback on the Jen character?
Well, it has been interesting because I've gotten feedback from different types of readers. So from females that are kind of superhero comic book readers, mm-hmm. and even manga comic book readers, I think the character has resonated in the fact that they're like, you know what? She's going to have to bring some resolution to this conflict somehow. Mm-hmm. And she's going to have to do something physical at some point to get this done. You know, it's interesting. I've had readers that are maybe newer to comics, mm-hmm. or readers that are, you know, much more of a, you know, whether they're people that really kind of enjoy prose and more of like novels. And their response has been interesting in that, yeah, you know, she does seem to be, you know, an aggressive woman at times. You know, it seems like some of the answers she's looking to, you know, to find, she's trying to find some of those answers with her fists. And, you know, it's fun, you know, and the great thing for me is, especially with kind of independent comics being such a small circle, and it's definitely growing, but like, I mean, for any particular book, you know, you don't have so many folks that you don't have connectivity with the people that are reading the book. So I get to hear so much from folks that read the books, mm-hmm. and some of it, I take note of, I'm like, yeah, you know what? That's actually a very good observation, mm-hmm. you know, and some of it is just kind of style points. They're like, you know what? That's cool. You know, she is an aggressive person. And even to my wife, she's like, you know what? You know, she is an aggressive person, but she's like, I can definitely see how, you know, for some of the people that I've worked with, worked for in the past, you know, she's like, yeah, but I could definitely see, you know, how you kind of drew on some of your old bosses for some of her personality traits.
It's kind of interesting. How does her being a DA influence Jen's actions?
So, and this is something that is seminal to her, but it evolves because she's a DA and she looks at things by the book, mm-hmm. black and white. Mm-hmm. Her becoming Black Tiger, it takes her to a different depth of some of the problems that she sees in the court. And she is forced to the fact that things aren't always as black and white as she would like them to be. And even when they are as black and white as she would like them to be, the system isn't always serving the proper justice. So then what? So she's actually very conflicted as the Black Tiger. And upon learning that her dad was a Black Tiger, she had some disappointment because her father was a police officer. So she was like, how can you as an officer of the law, you know, be running around as this vigilante acting above the law? You know, that goes counter to everything that you should believe in. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a dissonance for him. But for her, it's a dissonance. But she's starting to find peace and she's starting to find her rhythm. And that is a lot of what this story is about, is how does she reconcile being a by-the-book assistant DA, but also being a vigilante.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's different for her.
Big time. And very uncomfortable. And she was not a Black Tiger fan before she learned of the power in her family.
Hmm. Interesting. So that's going to take a while to get used to or to be able to utilize, right?
It will. And she really does not – she's not a mantle that she wants to take up. She felt it was a mantle that was, you know, she feels it as a burden. It was one that she had to take up with the passing, you know, of some of her family members. Mm-hmm. And she is looking to, find out who killed her father, right the wrongs that have been done. Mm-hmm. But at this point, she doesn't have a long view for being the Black Tiger. She doesn't see herself as a protector of the city this way. She sees herself doing that as a DA.
So this is a temporary thing for her.
That's what she's thinking.
Interesting. That's a very different way to look at things than we're used to most superheroes and stuff. They look at it as like a lifelong profession.
Right. Right.
So that'll be something different. Now, one of the things I noticed, and I don't want to spoil too much, but there's on the Indiegogo page, there's a mention of the fact that she doesn't only stay in Los Santos.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that. I mean, that you know, of course, the artist, you know, you've got to go to a different locale, all mm-hmm. those kinds of things. How does that play into Jen's experience?
No, this is great. I mean, you know, first and foremost, just as a comic book creator, I think the beauty of the medium of comics, you know, for me as a comic creator working with artists, you know, my artists, their page rate is no different whether we stay in Los Santos or we go somewhere else in the, you know, in God's galaxy. Mm-hmm. It's a universe. It's all the same. So from that regard, I love being able to take advantage of the fact that we're unconstrained and keeping in mind that I'm writing for the medium of comics. And in doing so, it gives me a freedom. So one of the things that we did, and as someone who absolutely, I've always loved martial arts, whether it be, you know, the old Hong Kong films or newer Hong Kong films, practiced some Kung Fu myself, and seeing the different styles of martial arts just around the world, one of the things she does is she ends up, as she's following the lead, she ends up in the jungles of Brazil. And she actually ends up fighting a master of a Brazilian capoeira. And she's never fought anyone like this before. Capoeira is, I guess it's the roots of breakdancing. So, you know, kind of the movements, kind of the way that, kind of pushing off of the ground, all those things, she's not used to those things. So she finds herself, you know, very much kind of in the soup, you know, trying to tangle with this master of capoeira. So you find yourself over there. She does then travel back to Los Santos, and you get to see more of kind of the different pockets, kind of a little Russia. You get to see a little bit more of Chinatown. You get to see elements of kind of where the metahumans, which are really kind of the scourge of the city, you know, they're like the folks that are the outcast and the downcast, because it's very hard for them to find work, especially if they're visibly metahuman. So they're kind of carving out their own little society, you know, in an unincorporated part of the city. So you get to see different elements.
Cool. Now, you did mention the art team. Is the art team the same on this book as it was on the previous one?
Primarily, yes. So the penciler is the same, Rod Pereira, Rod Looper. He is magnificent. And for those of you that enjoyed his work, he continues to push himself and push himself. So, I mean, the work that he does on this issue and the subsequent issue, which we've already started working on, or I should say graphic novel, since it's really three 25-page issues in each graphic novel, plus some additional artwork. It's outstanding. And he has really pushed me. And you're talking about, you know, going to exotic locales and exotic places, not in this graphic novel, but in the subsequent one. We have an adventure of a prior Black Tiger as part of the story that actually occurs in feudal Japan, with a lot of just supernatural elements that I think people are going to have a great time reading.
Wow. Very good. Very good. So what I've seen of the art, I really love. I think it's very dynamic and very, like I always say, I judge art by two things, by facial expressions and by action sequences. Mm. And both of those are really strong with his art. His art really, I mean, it just pops off the page to me. It really is great.
No, he does a great job. And working with him is such a pleasure. You know, one of the things as somebody who loves, you know, Hong Kong movies and, you know, loved reading 1980s, you know, Frank Miller Daredevil. I love well choreographed fight sequences. Mm-hmm. And that's something that he and I pine over, you know, in our stories, you know, kind of letting the flow of the fight be such that the reader can really follow it, really enjoy it, feel the impact of it, see the consequences of it. I love that. And he does so much with the art. You know, the scripting for me, when I script these issues, the scripting is pretty dense. I have a vision, but ultimately when you're working with a great artist, he catches the vision and then he says, oh, I see what you're doing here. This looks great. I think I see how we can improve this, and this may not work out the way you think it's going to work out. Mm-hmm. So it's always an iterative process. But the things that I appreciate is even as we're moving the story forward, he's always attuned to the kind of the emotion and the temperament of the characters. So, you know, even when we're kind of you know, telling parts of the story that may not have action, but it's moving the story forward. Mm-hmm. You can look at the pages, and this is something that my old boss, Michael Davis, who was one of the founders of Milestone, and when, you know, kind of digressing, when we would go to the comic shop, he would always flip through the pages first. And I said to him one time, I'm like, doesn't that ruin reading the story for you? He's like, no. He's like, if I flip through the pages, the flow of the story, I should be able to see the flow of the story. Then when I go back and read it, the words are telling me the things that I couldn't see through the flow of the story. Hmm. The words should not be telling me things that I can already see. Mm-hmm. And it should fill in the gaps, kind of like, you know, I guess kind of like, you know, if you have boulders with kind of the gravel and the sand, you know, so it fills in the gaps and completes the story. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with that in mind, when I write, it's a very kind of a robust script that I give him, but his artwork is so amazing that so much of what we end up kind of finally coming to is actually expressed in the art. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the book doesn't have to be overly verbose. Mm-hmm. You can enjoy, and if you pay attention to the art, because his art is very detailed, you can see a lot of what's going on, and our colorist is excellent. So he really helps bring the mood, kind of like the music in a movie. He really, you can really tell the mood of what's going on if you're just looking at the colors.
Mm-hmm. Really cool.
Yeah. Cool.
I have to mention, as when I look at the page, it's called Black Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Mm-hmm. And I noticed as I looked through some of the illustrations that, let's just say that what the dragon is doesn't remain hidden, apparently, for the whole book.
That's not. Well, the beauty of it is, A, that is not a very hidden dragon, is it? That
no.
is, and the page that he drew for the illustration you're looking at, when I know what you're looking at, mm-hmm. is a dragon manifesting itself in the middle of a mall. Mm. So this is a four-story mall, kind of in the food court. So it's kind of open and you can kind of see all the different levels. The dragon is manifesting itself, standing, you know, the full height of the mall, and just bedlam. Mm. You know, different tiers of the mall being destroyed by the dragon, people mm. here, there, and everywhere, all kinds of things happening. And that I can just soak in that page for so long. I see there's so much going on in there. But that's just the level of detail that Rod brings with his art. But no, you're exactly right. There's more that I want to say, but I don't want to give away, I think some of the elements that you'll really find fun when you read the story. But that particular dragon, you are right. There is really nothing hidden about that dragon.
See, what the dragon has to do with the black tiger is going to be something that I want to read about.
Mm-hmm.
That interests me. What do the two things have to do with each other?
Indeed.
So I'm going to be interested to see that. This is all really great storytelling. Well, I have to ask, do you know how many books you're going to do with Black Tiger?
Well, we have so this is volume one of Hidden Dragon. Volume two is about 10 pages away from being completed in terms of pencils and inks, and then it'll go to colors. Mm-hmm. So that story arc, that'll be a 150-page story arc in its completion. But there are, let me tell you, we have many Black Tiger stories to tell, both with this protagonist and with prior wielders of the Black Tiger power. Hmm. So, I mean, I don't think I'm going to be able to tell all the stories that I would love to be able to tell. So there's a lot of Black Tiger to go around.
Oh, good. That's good to hear. So the way to get these issues is through the Indiegogo.
Yes.
You said that they're available on the website too, right?
So Hidden Dragon is not yet available on the website. So you can get Legacy of Fury, which is the first graphic novel, all six of those issues. And I think the first issue is 32 pages and the subsequent five issues are each 25 pages. Mm-hmm. You can get those via the reader at beyondtimecomics.com. We will release the digital versions of the comics when we release, with the campaign. So for Hidden Dragon, those three issues will get released concurrently with the campaign so that, people will be able to read it online and then people will be receiving their books in their hands. Mm-hmm. But as of now, people cannot read Hidden Dragon online.
Not yet.
Not yet.
So that might change in the future after the Indiegogo is completed.
Yeah, when Indiegogo is completed in July, because one of the tiers is giving people access to the reader. We will give people access to the reader, and then we'll open it up. So if people just want to go to the reader and get access, they can do it there.
Cool. It's going to be fun because I enjoy the story. The storytelling is really gripping. I mean, it's just I can't put it down once I get started reading. It's very well told and very, like I said, the adventure gets me. I love to be drawn into the characters and to the story. And I don't know what's going to happen next, which is something that I really enjoy.
No, I appreciate that. That to me, that's the magic of comics.
Yeah.
As I've read comics, I've always been intrigued and love reading stories where, the character's on a great adventure and I have my ideas of where things may go, but things start going in different directions and I'm like, okay, this is exciting. I don't know what's going to happen. What's going to happen here?
That's the thing. They take on a life of their own.
They do. They
really
do.
Really
and then you kind of start to get to know the characters and you're like, oh, I hope this person doesn't become their own undoing, you know, as a result of, you know, this particular, you know, characteristic. I won't call it a character flaw, but this particular characteristic that this character has.
Very cool. Very cool. So now let's say if people want to follow you on social media, what's the best way to do that?
The best way to follow me, you can follow me at Beyond Time Inc., Beyond Time Inc. on Twitter, on YouTube, and on Instagram. Facebook, you can find me at beyondtimecomics.com.
Mm-hmm. Very
good. As well as the website, which is Beyond Time Comics.
Right, right. That's very important. Now, and again, this is going to be on Tuesday, Black Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And let me make sure I get my days all straight. It's going to be Tuesday the 18th.
That's
so
right.
It's not far away. Do you know what time of day it's going to hit?
It looks like we're going to do an opening stream in the evening. So okay. I want to say around 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, so 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Cool.
Is when we'll open on the 18th. Do sign up for the mailing list. The mailing list is available now. If you go to Indiegogo and you type in Black Tiger, Hidden Dragon, we plan on giving folks that sign up for the list and then subsequently back, we want to give those folks some extra goodies, you know, for doing that.
Very cool. Well, it's going to be a great story. I love the first one. And I think this one's going to be great too. So, and then I guess we'll have another chapter. You said this is the volume number one.
That's right. I guess
there'll be volume number two after the Magnus second chapter.
That's right. That's right. And it's already written and the majority of the pencils are completed. Pencils and inks are completed. So
great.
You will get that in your hands. Our intention is to, after Magna, to start that campaign towards the end of the year. So
great. Mm-hmm. Well, John, it's great stuff. I always enjoy your writing, and I always enjoy the books because it works on every level for me, and I just think it's just a wonderful thing. I love good indie comics that go places that quote-unquote regular comics can't go, because Batman has to always end up where he started so that somebody else can write him.
That's right.
But you're not tied by that, so you get to do whatever you want, which is it's a lot of fun to read.
I appreciate that. I really do. And I know that that is an advantage as an indie comic book creator that I do have. So I want to take full advantage of it.
Well, again, it's Black Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be starting on Tuesday the 18th. So, you know, pay attention. Go and sign up for the mailing list as soon as you get done listening to this interview. And we'll look forward to seeing other things. But again, John, just keep up the wonderful stuff. It's great storytelling.
Thank you so much, Wayne. I appreciate your show. I appreciate you having me on and letting me, you know, just kind of talk about this passion. And I appreciate all the support.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome back to the podcast Lewis Southard, creator of so many good things that I really enjoy, including one thing we're going to talk about this time called Villain Seeking Hero. And that's one of my favorite books that you do. And there's some other ones, too. We'll get to those in a couple minutes. How you doing, Lewis?
I'm all right, Wayne. I'm really excited to be back. And I'm even more excited to be talking about a book nobody ever talks about. And that's Villain Seeking Hero.
I love that book. I think I approached you with the first time that we talked, and I had started to read the book, and I really loved the concept of it. It's why don't you tell people what it's about before I start describing it?
Oh, that's a feat in and of itself of trying to describe what the book's about. I guess in layman's terms, it's about three sort of eccentric and down on their luck supervillains working for a bureaucratized supervillain organization. And it's mainly about their personal lives and their sort of corporatized exploits. I think that's a good way of putting it. The three main characters, there's Master Molecule, who's sort of your everyman. There's Spirit King, who is the self-proclaimed king of the spirit world. And then there's Nightman, the mute man of muscle mystery. The mute muscle man of mystery. There we go.
Okay. Because this book is comical on some levels, and on other levels, it's very tender. Just a funny thing to say about a villain book, but it's because there are so many surprises, and the reason why we're talking about it, I think the 18th issue has come out. My understanding is that's going to be the last one, at least for now.
At least for now, yeah. Can I at least briefly talk about the odyssey of this book?
Sure.
Its journey of how we made it all the way to issue 18? Well, it originally was an Action Lab Entertainment book, and it had the absolute opportunity of coming out at least a week before the industry shut down during the pandemic. It only came out digitally, and then I think issues 1 through 8 came out digitally, and then it was just put on the shelf. So after a couple months of it being in what's it called, like indefinite hiatus, I just kind of said, F this, I'm getting my rights back. And that turned into a whole ordeal. But luckily I did pull out the rare comic creator gets his rights back, his creator's rights back, and since then I've been self-publishing the book on Gumroad. So I've been able to I've released the original 8 issues, and I've since then continued the story. It ended on a cliffhanger in the middle of volume 2, and I've managed to finish volume 2, and then we have one of truly acknowledge the whole creative team, and we have an entirely new volume full of brand new, never before seen content, and that's volume 3.
Now, I hate to say it, 18, let's just say, leaves the door open for more.
Right. You know what's funny? I was thinking about that. I'm like, dang it, I'm really leaving everybody off on another cliffhanger. But in a weird way, if I never get to go back to it, it's kind of like, not a fitting ending, but it's like, I think people could say, oh yeah, that's an ending. Abrupt, but it's an ending. But I really do. I've written all of volume 4. I'll say that right now. But we talked about it. As of right now, it's sort of, this has become more of a passion project, and passion can only take you so far. And unfortunately, I have to cap it off. But there's other stuff in the works, so that'll be good.
Reality gets in the way of comics every once in a while.
Yeah, right? I don't want to say it's over, but I do want to, I really want to come back and finish what I've been building towards, because there is a climax I've certainly been building up to. And I think I will. But right now, I can't, I mentioned this off the air, but I said I can't balance this and new projects at the same time. So unless this becomes an overnight sensation, then it's got to go on. At least I get to put it on the shelf. I'm making the decision, right? So that's at least the very good. I feel more content with that.
Now, this was your first book, right?
Yes, it was. I broke into the industry with this book. And
it's such a good book, too. I mean, there's all kinds of wonderful surprises along the way. And part of me doesn't want to spoil half of them, because they were really, you know, I think if I remember correctly, 8 ends on a surprise.
Right. Yeah. A big one.
I don't feel any, I don't want to spoil, but there's
this
huge.
Do you want to do a non-spoiler discussion and then go into a spoiler discussion?
Well, I don't know. I want people to buy the book. See, this is the trick. If we spoil it, people will say, well, I don't have to buy the book. They've spoiled it all.
Listen, Wayne, nobody's buying the book. I think we could just talk about whatever. And if people find what we're talking about interesting,
Okay.
They'll check it out.
Okay. Well, let's just say Master Miracle is more complex than I gave him credit for. We'll start with that.
Yeah.
There was a big surprise. I guess we just spoil it here. He's hanging around with a hero.
A
female hero.
It's set up in the beginning of issue one. Master Molecule, on the first page, is fighting his arch nemesis, Lady Liberty. And after that, you see little snippets of them on the job. Mm-hmm. And there's little just hints that there's something more going on. But in the cliffhanger that Action Lab left it on is that it's revealed that Master Molecule and Lady Liberty, villain and hero respectively, are secretly married. Mm-hmm. And not only are they married, but they have a whole family. Mm-hmm.
I was shocked when I read that. I was surprised because that was such an interesting twist. I mean, I didn't expect that.
That was always part of it. That was sort of like my invincible moment, you know, where it turns out his dad's evil. That I was like, that's what I'm building up. That's when it turns out what the book's sort of about. Mm-hmm. That these people are all pretty complex and got weird things going on in their lives. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely the part of it, because that's sort of set up like that, this weird sort of situation. Like, what if Spider-Man was married to the Green Goblin or something like that? That's that weird sort of dynamic where it's like, how on earth does that work? Mm-hmm. And why is it happening? Mm-hmm. And that's something I really try to get into in the book.
Well, it's really, the whole business with them and their family is interesting. There's something that happens later on that makes me laugh. In issue 16, the Spirit King, right. he is supposed to be, people think that he's a hero.
Yeah, in the issue before, he stops a bomb, mm-hmm. and the media mistakenly identifies him as a superhero. Mm-hmm. And the issue after sort of picks up on that with how he's been dealing with the media reaction. Mm-hmm.
And then he's up there making a speech in front of people. And he actually goes in and they say, you know, he says, I'm receiving your kind appreciation, and recognition has been an honor. And for that, I have fooled you all, he goes. Which I laughed out loud when I read that. And he starts to float around. He says, indeed, I am not your hero. He goes and on and on. He goes on. And in the meantime, what's funny is at the same time, what's the name of the guy who's in charge of the
Blacksmith.
Blacksmith.
The night guy, yeah.
Yeah, Blacksmith and Master Miracle are sitting there. And he, in the process, the Spirit King announces himself as the leader of the Frightening Five, of which there are three members, which always makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Then he goes, and then there's Master Miracle going, I'm the leader of the Frightening Five. What? How can he say that?
Yep. I always like Blacksmith's reaction in that very same panel where he just bluntly says, like, oh, that was cool. Like, yeah. There you go. Cool. Neat.
Oh, heavens, that was a great – I laughed out loud when I got to that.
I don't know if you noticed in that issue, the first page is a direct homage to the Kitty Pryde page from X-Men.
Oh, really?
Where it's Professor X is a jerk, where she's like storming out of the mansion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, except we have – am I allowed to swear?
I suppose.
Okay, yeah, because I'm just quoting the book. It's just Master Molecule saying Spirit King is a prick.
Yeah.
And it's all done. It's all done, same exact posing. And even the lettering, we tried to replicate it as much as possible, which is very cool.
And then, of course, the leader says, he says, you're overreacting, Colin. I thought that was and he goes, this is a correct amount of reacting.
That one's probably my favorite in volume 3. That one's issue 16.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff happens in that one.
There's such fun stuff. The great thing about it is you know, I, at this point, of course, I look at Master Miracle a lot more sympathetically than I did at the beginning, mm-hmm. because of the family and the Lady Liberty and all this good stuff. And even though he's married to a superhero, he still wants to be a leader in the villain community. That part always gets me.
makes me laugh. But this whole thing is really, you know, it's very realistic. This is how these people probably would react in real life.
My sort of attitude with this is I try to make everybody as, I guess, realistic. And I hate saying that because I think that's really overdone when describing like more alternative superhero comics. Like, oh, this is a realistic take. Mm-hmm. And sure, like you'll get The Boys or Invincible. I think Invincible is maybe more akin to this, where I think the more generalized term of like, this is a different book. This is more mature. It's more violent, or like it's more gory. But my version of realistic is everybody's really petty and neurotic and just weird. And everybody's slightly a hypocrite. Mm-hmm. You know, and everybody's got their own issues going on, and they have to deal with the people they don't want to deal with. And just very, I guess the term to use is slice of life. That's very much in it. But my favorite part of this whole book is that while it is slice of life, it's often always juxtaposed by some ridiculous thing happening in the background. For example, in issue 15, which I believe is Weapons for Peace, there's a whole subplot that's even set up in the issue before about a young man who idolizes Master Molecule. And he wants revenge on Master Molecule for ignoring him. And his plan is to launch a nuke. And when he does launch the nuke, Master Molecule is like, "What the heck did you do?" And it's like, I've launched the nuke, and we only have 15 minutes before it comes back down. But that'll give me ample time to tell you everything I need to say. And then they just shoot him out a window. And then they just go to focus on the nuke. I think that's a good representation of what this book is. It's not about all the crazy stuff. It's about like what these people are thinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say the last issue made me laugh.
Issue 18?
Yeah. Issue 18 starts off with a young girl presenting wings that'll actually fly.
Yes.
To one of the superheroes. And the superhero, what's his name? Dr.
Superior.
Dr. Superior, which is the perfect name for the leader of the group. And he goes, and of course he finds all the flaws with her. I mean, these wings fly. I mean, come on now.
He did say it was objectively impressive that she did. Just subjectively, he's not impressed.
Well, but if they fly, I mean, come on now. I mean, who in the world doesn't want to fly? That's what she says at one point, I think she says. But everybody wants to fly, something to that effect. And what makes me laugh is one of the reasons he doesn't like the wings is that they're colored yellow.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, you can color them. You can change the color of them. I'm literally going, huh? If you could fly and the wings are yellow, what difference does that make? So he rejects her, and she comes out, and she's all rejected and stuff. And she decides that these wings are actually going to work, so she develops her own identity called Locust.
Yeah.
And given how this book runs, let's just say that things don't go according to the way she would like them to go.
Let's just say it. She bumps into a very my version of a daredevil type of character called Good Samaritan, and they have a bit of a confrontation that goes in a very unexpected way.
Well, I love the way that the first thing she says to him, "Please don't kill me."
Yeah, because she's not a super anything. She's just like a kid putting on a costume so she can get away with some petty crime. Mm-hmm. And then the idea is she runs into an absolute insane version of a daredevil Batman type vigilante. And I loved writing him because I just kept thinking of the Daredevil show when everybody was saying, like, "This is my city." Like every 5 minutes. So I made sure to have him reference the city whenever it was right.
Well, he's yelling at her. He says, "Was a son such a villain?" And he says, "Did he send you to finish me off?" And she goes, "No, I don't even know who that is." And I find that was funny. And then he starts Batmaning. He starts talking about, it reminds me of when the Earthquaker told me he was only a door-to-door salesman. Then he murdered the love of my life. And she goes, what?
No, she rocks. I love that character.
I just, you know, I'm reading this thing and things go awry from there, let's just say. And she decides she's going to try to get away, and he's not going to allow that. And things don't end well, let's just say. And she's all distraught. And they end up, the best part is they think that she, like the good guys.
She gets arrested. Let's set that up. She gets arrested by like a SWAT team or something.
Yeah. And they call her Moth Mother. And she goes, Moth Mother? She says, I'm not Moth Mother.
And they do say, oh, I guess you're some other insect-themed person then.
I mean, I'm sitting here. This is just, you know, this is too funny.
This book's a lot of fun to write. I'll say that right now.
It's hilarious.
Just,
gosh,
it's just a good time.
I just, you know, the thing it was, and then it ends, as we said, with something of a cliffhanger. It ends with this. One of the things that always makes me laugh in comics was when the last words they say are the title of the chapter.
Oh, well, it's said three times, I think.
Oh, is it? That was the time it really stood out to me, was in that last. Well, gosh, I guess we can spoil it. At the very end, who's sitting? She gets captured and she gets, you know, arrested, basically.
Right.
And who was sitting in the shadows when she, in the cell where she gets thrown? But Master Miracle is sitting there.
Yep.
And Master Miracle says, honestly, kid, I have no idea what's going on. He says, I guess we just landed ourselves into a world of trouble. And that's the beginning of the chapter. The title is The World of Trouble.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned it's said three times. Once by her girlfriend, when she's telling her not to become the Locust again. She said, if you continue this, you're going to end up in a world of trouble. Yeah. And then the second time is when Good Samaritan shows up and he's like, you just entered a world of trouble, punk. And then the third time is when it's like, I guess we're in a world of trouble.
Well, the terrible thing is that's the way it ends. And of course, that makes me want to see more. I mean, you know.
Well, I don't know if I said it. I have old volume four.
Yeah.
Written. Yeah. I know. I'll mention it. I'll just say it. Why not? Who cares? I don't care. Volume 4 is going to open – it was going to open with Master Molecule, Locust, and a bunch of other villains doing a Suicide Squad-esque mission for the government. And they were going to go fight Nazis in South America to stop the Nazis from summoning Ghost Hitler.
Oh, no.
And my version of Ghost Hitler is just a bedsheet ghost with a stupid mustache and haircut. So that's how intimidating that is. But I like Locust because I was going to set her up, and I still will if I'll continue the book. Mm-hmm. She was going to be Master Molecule's protege.
Oh.
This is sort of the start of that, where because she's a young kid who doesn't really know what she's doing, mm-hmm. and he's like, you know what? I'll teach you to be a villain because why not? And then everything goes from there.
Oh, man. Honestly, folks, if you have not read this book, I highly encourage you. It's called Villains Seeking Hero. So we can get it right. And you said it's on Gumroad.
It is on Gumroad. My Gumroad's just my name, Lewis Southard. Mm-hmm. And all 18 issues are – I think they'll be up by next Wednesday. Next Wednesday –
19th?
Yes. That's when issue 18 comes out.
Okay. So
and that's going to be everything.
I honestly encourage you to do it. It is a wonderful, funny book. You know, it's the way that people used to call comics funny books. And this is a genuinely funny book, I have to say. From the moment I started to read it, I just was captivated by this book. And it just kills me that something that I really love is not – you know, can't continue at the moment. And I just, God.
Imagine how I feel.
You created the whole thing. And you did the whole thing. It's just heartbreaking, I have to say. This, as you can tell, my talking about it, I just enjoyed this book tremendously. It was.
Well, let's just give, we already kind of talked about it, but I'll give a taste of what Volume 3 entails.
Mm-hmm.
issue, it opens with issue 13, which is called Somewhere Under the Rainbow, which is about two rival supervillains getting into a turf dispute only because they are both rainbow themed. And they have to only one of them can be rainbow themed at the end of the day. And the three, our three main characters, Master Molecule, Spirit King, and Nightman, have to come in and be the mediators of this dispute. Issue 14 is Nostalgiapocalypse, sort of mentioned that, which is about a young, you sort of watch this kid grow up, mm-hmm. idolizing Master Molecule and wanting to become a supervillain, and you get to see his journey becoming a supervillain, mm-hmm. which I always thought was a nice companion piece to The World of Trouble, mm-hmm. where you see this young guy sort of have everything work out for him versus Locust, who just can't do anything right. Mm-hmm. After that is issue, what is that, 15? Yeah, 15, which is Weapons for Peace, mm-hmm. which they go to a weapons expo to steal a nuke, and everything falls apart. And then after that is issue 16, which is Citizen King. Mm-hmm. Sort of the first Spirit King-centric – it is actually the first Spirit King-centric story, mm-hmm. which is all about him accidentally becoming a superhero. Mm-hmm. After that is Evil After Dark, where Spirit King and his buddy Nightman go to a supervillains-only nightclub to try to pick up women.
Oh, jeez. And then, that's funny.
And then – oh, that whole issue, Evil After Dark. I say that to my friends. That's just the Blue Balls issue, if anything. And then at the final, capping it all off is issue 18, which is The World of Trouble, which is all about a brand new character, Locust, and her trying to figure everything out by becoming a supervillain.
This book is just such a joy, especially if you enjoy superhero comics and have read them as long as I have. You will find the humor in this book, you know, unescapable. I just, you know, when things would go on, and yet there's serious things going on, like the surprise when we find out that Master Miracle is married to Lady Liberty. I was like, my jaw hit the floor. I was like, what?
Yeah, there's a lot. I had a one of my letterer who does all my stuff. He messaged me after he read, I believe it was Citizen King. And he's like, damn, dude, like you really kind of went dark with this issue. And I'm like, yeah, that's just what the book is about. Sometimes it gets a little too, I guess, negative, for lack of a better word. But that's sort of the whole point. You can't really.
Yeah.
I like exploring the sort of flaws of these characters as well.
Well, I have to say, you know, in the real world, and I know you want to realistic, we don't want to use that term too much, but people, real people, if they were in this circumstance, they wouldn't they wouldn't act the way that they do in say Marvel or DC.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be like that. And so for me, the thing that I enjoy it so much is I could see real people doing this.
Right. Yeah. I just, there's a lot of things. They're just so neurotic and so weird. And my favorite thing is talking to my friends with trying to break down each character's motivation, mm-hmm. at like the villain Skull Commander. There's a villain in the book named Skull Commander. And mm-hmm. my friend asked me, like, who are the villains in your stories? I'm like, well, the main villain is Skull Commander. And it's like, well, what's his villainous motivation? And I just said out loud, oh, he wants his friend back. And that was it. And then there's like, that's not really villainous, is it?
No.
And then I said, oh, I guess not. But then when you read the book, he's doing all sorts of heinous, terrible things, mm-hmm. just because he wants his friend back. And I think that's – I think a good – you know what? I read a nice review several months ago. Somebody found the book and they wrote a whole thing about it. Mm-hmm. And they really put it in a way that I never considered, where they described the book not as a superhero deconstruction, but as a reconstruction, where it's like everything's taken apart and put back together again, but in a very strange way. and I really like that, where it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, I guess that does happen, you know, where it's like, instead of sort of breaking everything down to its more stereotypical elements, it's more so, okay, let's break it down and then see what it can be like on in another spectrum or in another light. Mm-hmm. And then you just kind of run with it.
Mm-hmm. See, the thing to me is that whole business with the yellow wings, because I have acrophobia, I've always wanted to fly.
Okay.
And, you know, when I saw the whole, when he goes on and says, well, they're yellow, and that means cowardice.
Yeah.
To people. And I'm sitting there going like, what? I said, I would love to fly. If I could only fly and get over my acrophobia, man, I would love that. I said, I don't care what color the wings are. And so
He did mention that he also doesn't like how they look like bug wings.
Yeah, well, come on. Come on now. I mean, you know, if you get to fly, I don't care what they look like, you know, as long as you get to fly.
Dr. Superior has some good lines. My favorite one of his is he says, your wings can't save my company or my marriage. Yeah, because he's talking about his wife's mad at him too for some reason.
Well, he's Dr. Superior. Right there, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So this book is just wonderful, I have to say. I'm just sick that 18 is the last for now. I truly enjoy. I'm going to keep these because these are every once in a while when I want a good laugh and enjoy myself, I'm going to read this.
If you don't mind me asking, which issue really was your favorite out of the new bunch?
So, well, see, 18, I think, is the one that really made me laugh. I really enjoyed it. And the funniest thing is, we don't see any of the regular villains in this.
No, no.
It's not until the last page or two that we finally get Master Miracle involved. It's all these other characters. But that's the wonderful thing about the series is that we keep getting new people involved, and they are their own characters. And, you know, it's so much fun to watch because, you know, a lot of comic books tend to focus, you know, Batman almost entirely focused on Batman. And, you know, you've got the other people around, but they're kind of, they're extraneous mostly. But in this book, every character has their own life in their own way.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
They contribute something that nobody else does in the story. And so for me, I really, you know, whenever I see somebody new, I go, okay, now what?
Yeah, that's great. It's a shame that the book won't be continuing anytime soon because volume 4 is when I was really going to go into the personal lives of some of the characters I haven't really examined yet. There was going to be a whole issue dedicated to Skull Commander and what he does when he's not being a villain.
Oh, no.
And then there was Spirit King. Oh, Spirit King. There's one issue. If I had the money, I would make it right now. Mm-hmm. There's an issue called in volume 4. I called it Mild-Mannered English Teacher. And it's about Spirit King, who's like, he's got glowing yellow eyes and he can fly. And he's, when he talks, he doesn't speak with contractions. He's very strange. And I wrote a whole issue centered around his secret identity, which is an English teacher at a random high school.
Oh, no.
And his disguise was just a whole riff on Clark Kent where he wears glasses, but his eyes still glow yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And he wears a purple button up and black slacks, but he also still wears his cape and his villain gloves and villain boots.
In the classroom?
In the classroom. Oh. But nobody can figure out that he's the Spirit King. Everybody just thinks he's normal. But there's only one person in the whole school, the gym teacher. The gym teacher's the only one that's like, hey, does anybody notice this guy?
Goodness.
Yeah, that one I wish I could make. That one, the Skull Commander one.
That's so discouraging because it's just such a wonderful book. It's just, I'm going to keep them just like I said. So if I ever want to laugh and I want to see the funniness of the superhero genre, I'm going to keep this around for that because it's just,
I appreciate that.
So much fun. I knew from the moment I read it, I knew I was going to, because I think I reached out to you because I enjoyed the book so much.
Yeah.
It's such a great book. It's just sick. It's just the terrible thing is, you know, certain books I would love to stop and say, let's take the money from there and put it into this book, which is actually something good.
I've been thinking about it a lot more. I've been thinking about maybe trying to fund the next volume on Kickstarter, because I know there's been a sort of Kickstarter boom, and a lot more people are using that to fund their projects. But I'm not so entirely sure yet, because I've never done it, so I don't really. I've been researching, but I don't know yet.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'd support it.
Thanks.
That's one.
Yeah, there we go.
That's one. So honestly, if you were in the mood for something that's going to brighten your day, this is one of those books that's just going to – yes, it has its dark aspects to it, but those just make it funnier in my aspect.
I'd say it's 70% ridiculous funny and then 30% real world, like, ooh, that's a bit much.
Oh, it's so good. Anyway, I highly encourage you. It's called Villains Seeking Hero. And go to Gumroad and download them all. I can tell you, buy them all, because you're gonna enjoy them all. Just wonderful stuff. Just terrific. And even though this one's coming to an end, the good news is, Lewis, you've got other projects going on, thankfully.
I do. I'm still working. Wow.
Yay.
what a great – oh, I shouldn't be joking about that. It is a good thing that I'm still working.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what do I have?
Yeah.
I have the Gothic Western horror book, Midnight Western Theater, that's been coming out. I've been working with Soda and Telepaths. They have a new anthology book, which is about the apocalypse. I could talk about it here. Why not?
Okay.
Nobody's going to tattle on me. It's an anthology book about the apocalypse, and it's supposed to post-apocalypse, and everybody could write whatever they want. And I was fortunately one of the lucky writers to be selected.
Mm.
And my story is, I don't know if I could say the title. All I'm going to say is it's about, you could come up with your own apocalypse. You know, it didn't have to be one specific apocalypse. So mine was like hypothetical. What if there was a big war between the Earth and a space invading force a la the Cybermen, more like robotic alien, an alien robotic force, let's say that. And my story is about so they fight, it's a big war, both sides lose, everything's devastated, and my story is about the last surviving human and the last surviving robot from the alien invasion force. And it's about the two of them working together. But I'm not really allowed to talk too specifically about it. So it's not what you think from what I just said.
Okay.
Because it makes it sound like it's two dudes trying to work together, like a buddy cop thing.
Okay.
Not that at all.
Okay. So how do we get this thing?
I think the Kickstarter is going to be popping up, I think, in the summertime.
Okay.
So if you want to support me and support that anthology book, that's going – you can just follow Soda and Telepaths.
Okay.
Or me. You could just follow me online at Lewis Southard. But I'd say Soda and Telepaths, because then you'll get the link to the Kickstarter and updates and whatnot. And not only will you support me, but you'll be supporting many other talented creators and writers and artists who are working right now in that big anthology. So cool. that'll be great.
I'll definitely get down to that. I'll keep my pay attention. I get their email newsletter.
Oh, okay.
So I like to see what they're talking about and stuff.
Sure. I have been working on other stuff. Everything else has just been in development. We mentioned this off mic. I'm working on a story called – on a graphic novel with a very talented artist, Dean Kotz, on a book called The Blackout Bombshell, which is about an alcoholic detective who blacks out one night, and during his blackout, he's hired to do a case. And when he comes to, he has to figure out what the case even was. And it's if you liked Villain Seeking Hero, and if anybody checks out Villain Seeking Hero and wants something more akin to that tone of comedy and some drama and some more dark elements underneath it all. Mm-hmm. That book is a very good place to find that sort of tone. And the other thing I've been working on is, I guess it's a fantasy book. Mm. It's a fantasy, well, two fantasy books, but I'll only talk about the one because that one's further in development. Mm. It's called Helvana and Nightcaster. Mm-hmm. And it's about a magical couple, the best sort of sorcerers in all the multiverse. They're the most powerful, most talented wizards. And they're awesome. They're great. They could do whatever. And then one day they discover that the lady of the relationship is pregnant, and the whole book's just about learning to become a parent.
Oh, okay.
And it's especially when you're not expecting to become a parent.
Mm.
And that's what that book's about. And it's slice of life, but there's also multiple subplots of revenge because there's just these eccentric supernatural and even scientific villains coming out of the woodwork, mm-hmm. who want revenge on the titular characters. So I think that's another good villain seeking hero esque book that I hope to get picked up soon. So that'll be good.
Well, if you write it, I'm going to be buying it because it's going to be good stuff. Because every one of yours that I've read, and I've read several of the ones that you've mentioned, and I really enjoyed them. I think that, I hope you get to write even more as things go forward, because such good stuff.
Me too.
Yeah,
I hope I get more work.
That's always a good thing. And you get to do more work. Well, Lewis, again, it's Villain Seeking Hero. You had Midnight Western Theater. Find that. There's all these other ones that are coming from Soda and Telepaths. And you've got all kinds of good stuff coming. So if you see that name, Lewis Southard, on a book, be sure to buy it because it's...
Stay away from it. Don't even touch it. It's tainted.
No. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a great read. And I highly encourage you to do that because you haven't written anything bad yet in my estimation. So
let's keep
it going. So it's really good. So just keep it up, Lewis. That's all I can tell you.
Thank you. Can I plug my stuff real quick?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. If you liked my voice, if you liked anything I've had to say, or if you end up reading any of these books and you're like, damn, this guy's on to something, you can find me at Lewis Southard or at Lewis J. Southard online. And then you can just hear my ramblings on a day-to-day basis.
Spell Southard for people.
Southard.
Because people on the internet aren't necessarily good spellers, and we want to make sure they find it. So that's the way to do it.
There you go.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.